Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is about empowering people. This is our Empowerment Hour. And during today's show, we'll be talking about the link between war and big finance. We'll take a look at feedlot meat and how that's caused an enormous soy boom that has devastating impact upon the environment and human health. The latest on health and healing, and also some information for all of you who are taking tranquilizers. Here's a question for you. Why do clinical trials for all tranquilizers exclude depressed people? Wouldn't you think that those would be the people, since that's who is being marketed to and given to, who should be in the trials? They're not, and you'll find out. Also from the environmental section, the drought in the Amazon, the great rainforest, one of the largest rainforests on the planet, well, it's getting worse. And what will that do to global warming? So we have a lot to share, and beginning in about 10 minutes, I'll open up our calls, and you can call in and share your points of view, questions on any topic that you find of importance to you. Later in the program, Dr. Martin Feldman will give us his input on cataracts. So let's begin. Most people enjoy sweetness, and it brings out a flavor in a lot of items that otherwise would be rather boring. The question is, what can we consume that's sweet that does not have a high glycemic index? Like, for example, bad sugars that we should not have are any of your glucose or sucrose, your white table sugars, or your corn syrups. So then what? Well, how about one you may not have tried? Organic coconut palm sugar is very nutritious. It's ecologically beneficial and provides sustained energy with an inspired taste. Now, organic coconut palm sugar is very good. While coconut sugar has long been used by South Asian and Southeastern Asian culinary recipes, they're used all the time, it hasn't gotten into the United States on a very large basis. Sweet tree coconut sugar has an extremely low glycemic index, an extremely high nutrient content, and that means it's good for us. And it's 100% organic. There's minimal processing and very little filtering. In fact, it's virtually unfiltered. There's no bleaching, and it contains no preservatives. So for those of you who are diabetic, who want something that's very low on the glycemic index, it's rated a GI 35. By comparison, most of the other sugars in the health food store, like agaves, are GI 42. Honey is 55, and cane sugars are 68. Also, coconut sugar produces a slow energy release, which helps us with our highs and lows. It keeps our blood sugar more even. Now, the major component of sweet tree organic coconut sugar is sucrose, followed by glucose and fructose, but in their natural, unprocessed forms. And so one of the things, if you're looking to sweeten your desserts and your other dishes, your hot cereal in the morning, that's what I would suggest. Again, it's organic coconut palm sugar. For those of you who have heard me suggest on many occasions that the health of the body starts in the intestine, and for a simple reason, because there's no direct filtration system between the intestine and the villi in the intestine. These are these millions and millions of tiny little hair-like follicles that hang from the intestinal walls, and that's what absorbs your nutrients. Well, then, let's say that you're eating something that's bad or toxic. That gets absorbed into the bloodstream. Well, how come you're not poisoned instantly? It's because a substantial part, the largest single amount of your body's immune system defenders are located around your gastrointestinal tract. So when toxins do come in, then they're able to stop them, engulf them, and enzymatically digest them and eliminate them, what is called phagocytosis. Now let's say that you are a health-minded person. You don't eat hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, pizzas, colas, all types of junk food. Instead, you're very conscious about your diet. Well, immediately what happens is that instead of having a disproportionate number of your immune system around your intestine, it can go to other places where it's needed and turn off local focal infections in your teeth and gums, in your joints, in your lungs, in your throat. That's why one of the very first things I do when counseling someone, especially someone with, let's say, cancer, is I ask, do you have any silver fillings in your mouth? Oh yeah, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. Yes, it is. That's mercury. And that means you could also have infections. Have you checked to see with a periodontist, do you have any periodontal infections? I never thought about it. Well, if you have an infection in your jaw, your gums, even one you may not know about, that's causing your immune system to go there. So how can it go there and fight the cancer simultaneously? So cleansing out the intestine, reestablishing a healthy microflora, bacteria, will immediately help you build up your immune system. That's why detoxification and rebuilding are so important. So, first and foremost, get rid of all the bad things, all the colas and coffees, get rid of them, and all the pastries and all the white flour products, the gluten products, get rid of them. Then, start juicing. Having 6 to 10 glasses of fresh organic vegetable juice a day, and a few fruit juices, providing that the berry juices, or a combination of lemon, lime, grapefruit, orange, and watermelon. That's also very detoxifying. Then follow that with probiotics. Billions of probiotics 3 times a day. That will help establish good bacteria. Now remember, you have 10 times more bacteria in your body, minimally, than you have cells. And you have from 75 to 100 trillion cells. It gives you an idea how much bacteria you have. Now what you think can directly turn the bacteria in a good or negative way. Negative thoughts, stress, anger, resentment, vengeance thoughts, all that precipitates a negative biochemistry. Cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and that then will cause the bacteria to become more pathogenic. So you literally can create bad bacteria. Now, of course, if you're throwing sugar in there at the same time, or coffee at the same time, or alcohol, you're really proliferating the bacteria, and on top of that, generally the yeast as well. Because more often than not, when I find someone is sick, they have an overgrowth of yeast, candida, and they have an imbalance in bacteria. Here's the latest study from the most respected scientific publication in the world, Nature Magazine. This was reported in Science Daily. Common dietary fat and intestinal microbes lead to heart disease, and I'll quote this. A new pathway has been discovered that links a common dietary fat and intestinal microflora with an increased risk of heart disease, so said the Cleveland Clinic in this article published in Nature. The study shows that people who eat a diet containing a common nutrient found in animal products, such as liver, eggs, meats, cheese, and dairy products, fish, and shellfish, are not predisposed to cardiovascular disease solely on their genetic makeup, but rather, here's where it's important, on the microorganisms that live in our digestive tracts and how they metabolize a specific lipid, phosphatidylcholine, also called lecithin. Lecithin is, and its metabolite, choline, are also found in many commercially baked goods, dietary supplements, even children's vitamins. And the study examined about 1,800 patients and who were referred for cardiac evaluation as well as plasma samples from mice. And when fed to mice, lecithin and choline were converted to a heart disease-forming product by the intestinal microbes, which promoted fatty plaques deposits to form within arteries, atherosclerosis in humans, and high blood levels led to heart disease. Now, what this means is this, in lay language. We should not be eating any animal proteins. No eggs, no fish, no meats of any kind, no dairy. Instead, we should be consuming heart-healthy vegetables, legumes, nuts, seeds, starchy vegetables, fruits. If we did that, and then we took some probiotics, and by the way, sauerkraut is a great probiotic, or non-dairy acidophilus, then we protect our heart because we create only good bacteria. Animal proteins contribute to bad bacteria. So when you combine animal proteins and the lecithin, you can contribute to heart disease. So that's why that's important. Welcome back, everyone. I'm sorry for the technical issue. Seems though someone hacked in and took us offline. This is the fifth time that my show specifically has been sabotaged like this, even though I brought in some of the best IT people and internet security people from Russia, from Germany, people who specialize in this. So it shows you something about the sophistication of people who are capable of getting past all these firewalls to do this. I've also been informed that because of my work against the nuclear industry and the medical pharmaceutical industry and the new documentaries, the ones that are winning awards in these festivals. Yesterday I was in New Milford, Connecticut, a beautiful small town where Death by Medicine, in a very important independent film festival, one of the finest in the world, won outstanding feature documentary. So we were very pleased with that. But we have been told that due to my work, we can expect that I will be the topic of a lot of efforts to try to discredit. They've already had a campaign going on at KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA in Berkeley, WPI in New York, PFW in Washington, and anywhere and everywhere that they can stop the information from getting out. I'm not angry about it. I understand this comes with what happens on the other side of the issue. What happens is that when you present information that the general public is not aware of, and you're able to back it up with good solid scholarship and science, that if you are not a public person, it's of no significance. They don't have any qualms. They have no fear. But if you are, and you have an ever-growing audience of independent and progressive-minded thinkers from all stripes and backgrounds, then it means that, well, you're a problem, and they have to deal with it. They will deal with it with the tools they have. Those tools generally start with blackmail. If you're married, they say you're having an affair. Well, I'm not married. If you're straight, they say you're gay. Well, I'm straight, but I support gay rights, so it wouldn't matter anyhow. If you know anyone in organized crime, they try to associate with the organized crime. I don't know that. Well, if you're not taking drugs, they try to want to... The world will believe you're a druggie. Well, I've never had a drug in my life. I'm not condemning anyone or criticizing anyone who has. It's just that the ways you would normally try to hurt someone don't work with me. And, because I really don't care what people think of me. I never have. I care what I think of me. And as long as I respect me, then people can have their own points of view. Long ago, I learned a very important lesson in life. If your only sense of self-esteem or self-value comes from what other people share with you, then you're going to be a feather in the wind, blown from thoughts of one person to another. Could you imagine that? Ground yourself in the completeness of your own life, the importance of your own efforts and journey, and then realize that when you decide to stand up, step out, take a position that runs contrary to the prevailing view, which I have my entire career, they're not going to like it. If you become popular, then you become a threat. If you could take money, patients, clients, business away from them, and it's estimated that I cause about $7 billion a year to be shifted into healthier purchasing practices and away from sick practices. If someone listening goes from eating fast foods to healthy foods, from buying clothes made in China with slave labor to made in America, if they go out of a commercial bank into a savings loan or credit union, all of these, over a period of time, they count. So, and with the important investigative reporting articles I'm doing now, especially against the nuclear industry and the lies and deceptions, and you would have to be me and see how many places I've gone where you see the people who clearly are there to observe what I'm doing, even planting people in my office to see if they can figure out which investigations I'm doing, what states I'm in. It will not stop what we're doing. Not at all. We will just continue doing what we do. You should understand that they will continue doing what they're going to do. And the more people who shift over to a healthier lifestyle, who become free in the way they think, those become people that they will not be able to control and alter their perceptions as easily as they have in the past. And everything is perception. Perception becomes our reality. Alter a person's perception, you've just gotten in control of the reality. And now's the time that we should start looking at all the misinformation, the lies, and say, what can I believe? What is real? What beliefs do I no longer want to support? It was interesting. Yesterday, before I went up to Connecticut, I dropped off in the health food store to have a juice. And this senior citizen woman came over to me. She was standing in line. And she said, I just want to share something with you. She said, I'm a professor of philosophy at Sarah Lawrence University. And I am one of those dyed-in-the-wool, really strong liberals. But I must say, after listening to your programs, I'm now no longer considering myself that strong liberal, but rather an independent and progressive. Hence, I entertain thoughts and ideas from people of all walks of life that previously I would not have. She said it's been an enlightening journey. How many other people can say the same? Today, they're better able to understand the issues of life because they're not just reacting, they're using reason. So for every person that wakes up one day realizing they're free to make choices on their own, they're not going to be manipulated or controlled by others, they are of more value than their ideologies give them credit for, then that's a free person. And those we have by the millions. I was giving information out before I was taken off the air. And I was talking, I don't know how much of you heard, and we're also video streaming, and I'll ask my engineer, did we get our video stream back up so that you can watch the program? We've been off video stream. We got back on with Jesse Ventura on Friday, and hopefully tonight and all this week we will be back up to that. I'll share a few more health and nutrition, and I'll open up our line so you can call in and share your thoughts and points of view on any of the issues that you find important. Next up, if you know someone going to any country where they would be concerned about malaria, there's new research from Norwegian University of Life Sciences that showed that common wormwood, sweet wormwood plant, that is Artemisia annua, A-N-N-U-A, and the bark of the cinchona, C-I-N-C-H-O-N-A, tree, have been used for centuries against malaria. And the parasite has not become resistant to it as it has other anti-malarial drugs. So just be aware that wormwood and the cinchona, you should take that with you. And also some brand new research from Molecular Nutrition and Food Research, the peer-reviewed journal, and a Professor Gu, Professor of Food Science and Human Nutrition, University of Florida, found that nano pomegranate has anti-cancer potential. I'll read this. Quote, Bioactive compounds from pomegranate may self-assemble into nanoparticles with gelatin and exhibit efficacy at stopping the growth and spread of cancer cells. Well, that's good. Now, what I do is I eat pomegranate, but I also have a lot of pomegranate, high milligrams pomegranate, in one of the powders. And that means that you've taken away the fiber and you've taken away the water. So now as you mix it with any liquid, you're allowing it to be broken down into its smallest component that it can get into your body, and that's all good. So, very excited about that research. Also, the ACAI, A-C-A-I, new study on this in the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis, quote, ACAI juice may provide anti-inflammatory benefits that offer protection from hardening of the arteries, according to this new research. Quote, we provide direct experimental evidence showing that a diet containing an ACAI juice at the dose of 5% develops significant less atherosclerosis lesions, unquote. That's from Dr. Wu at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. Now, those of you using your red powders, you are getting ACAI at even a higher amount than what they used in here in this study. So that's also good. And also, substance in tangerines fights obesity and protects against heart disease. This is from University of Western Ontario, and it says, quote, new research has discovered a substance in tangerines not only preventing obesity, but also offering protection against type 2 diabetes and even atherosclerosis, the underlying disease responsible for most heart attacks and strokes. That's according to Murray Huff, vascular biologist at the Schulze School of Medicine and Dentistry, and published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes. So tangerines, how about that? I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Now we're going to open it up for your calls. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. With us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. And now for something about what happens when we start eating meat. First, just pull back and look at the picture from the wider perspective. Where does the meat come from? Where is it grown? In one hamburger, you'll probably be eating the meat from at least 100 different cattle. Okay. Where were the cattle grown, raised? Well, more often than not in South America. This is why this article, an alternate from Jill Richardson, is so important, because much of South America is rapidly coming to resemble Iowa, where one might expect to see virgin Amazon rainforest and lush grasslands or Patagonian steppe. There are now often monocultures, meaning a single crop of soybeans, genetically engineered, and going for miles. Now, within another week or two, I'll be going around the world filming my 12 tipping points, and one of them will be in the Amazon. And each time I keep coming back, I'm interested in measuring how far are these monocrops of soybeans going, how much of the rainforest is being torn down. Because once you get rid of the Amazon, you're ending up with a desert, because there's no real topsoil there. It's very thin. And they don't have the right terrain for grasslands. And what you have now is you have pasture-based cattle ranches, and they're being replaced by feedlots. In the feedlots, the cattle eat some of the soy produced on the land where they once would have grazed. but an enormous portion of the soil is never eaten in South America. Instead, it is exported mainly to China or the European Union. But the United States is the largest producer and exporter of soy in the world, and thus not a major market for South American soy, since we produce our own. But the change has occurred only in the last few decades. Soybeans now occupy huge swaths of land in Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, Bolivia. And together, these nations make up five of the world's top 10 soy producers. Most significantly among them are Brazil and Argentina, which together produce over 105 metric tons of soybeans in a year. Half of Argentina's cropland is devoted to soy, and the crop makes up one-third of the country's exports. And for the most part, soy cultivation and processing and exporting took off in these countries since 2000. Soy is typically crushed into meal, which is fed to animals, and made into oil used for biofuels or added to many other food products. And the changes in farming that have accompanied the soy boom have hardly raised an eyebrow for many Americans, where soy has been a major crop and a livestock feed for decades. After all, the U.S. more or less invented and then exported this farming model. George Washington Carver invented the soybean, brought it to our attention, and the soybean is now grown on large farms, often over 2,500 acres, and sometimes on farms significantly larger than that. Now, as the acreage devoted to soy grew over the last decade, the land became concentrated in fewer for your hands. So soybeans are grown using commercial fertilizer, which is bad, herbicides like Roundup, glyphosate, and atrazine, and 2,4-D insecticides like endosulfan, and fungicides, all bad. And in 1996, Argentina was the first to permit genetically engineered soy. Now 98% of the nation's soy is genetically engineered. And today, Argentina is also home to several weeds resistant to Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, a direct result of overuse of Roundup on genetically engineered soy. And from Argentina, genetically engineered soy was smuggled and illegally planted in neighboring countries, and Brazil legalized in 2003, and by 2007, two-thirds of its crop were genetically modified. And along with soy comes a model of vertical integration and corporate concentration. Five companies in Argentina, Cargill, Bungie, Dreyfus, and two Argentina companies, control 80% of Argentina's $5 billion in soybean oil exports. And similarly, Dreyfus and Cargill, Topher and Archer Daniels Midland and Nidera control soybean meal. And it's about $7 billion. And often farmers contract with these companies, which designate how the farmers to grow the beans. And as many of the companies are foreign, and as are the companies that make the seeds and fertilizer and pesticides, the average person has nowhere to go to complain. All they know is that what's once was beautiful rainforest and land used by people to grow multiple crops, now it's all just one big soy farm. Why? Because in India and China and other Southeast nations, or in South Korea, as their economies become more prosperous, as more people move up the economic ladder, the first thing they want the Western diet. They want the hamburgers and the hot dogs and the pizzas. They want what we have. They want the fried chicken. They want animal-based products, because they've been led to believe that if you're eating low on the food chain, for example, if you're eating the lowly root vegetables and starchy vegetables, or the China, if you're eating lotus root, that's a poor person's food, or rutabaga, poor person's food. And grains like barley, that's a poor person's grain. They want meat, and they want confections. They want sugary items, and they're getting them. They're also getting disease and obesity, heart disease and cancers they have never had in any statistically significant number compared to their population in the past. So we are exporting our model of behavior, and it's devastating. So, when we don't have rain over a large part of the United States and major drought, one of the reasons is people shifting towards growing soy to feed the cattle and pigs and chickens, so that people all over the world who once were poor and are now middle class, or middle class, now upper middle class, can have the American diet and all the disease that comes with it and all the ecological destruction without thinking one little second about any of it. We don't think about where our food comes from, and that's unfortunate. I'm Gary Noll. Your turn. Give us a call. Our phone lines are now open on any topic you'd like to talk about. 888-874-4888. They were down. Our phone line also went out, but I'm just now getting the nod from engineer. Our phone's lines are up, so if you've been trying and couldn't get through, now you can get through at 888-874-4888. A few more things on our environmental front that I think are important, and that is Canada's forest, something we never think about. We just know Canada's a very beautiful place north of us. Well, it's large. Canada's as large as the United States, continental-wise. But Canada must limit large-scale industrial activity in its boreal forest, the world's largest intact timberland, to preserve millions of lakes and rivers critical to forming Arctic sea ice. Now, this is something you have not heard before, so I'll share this with you because I want you to always be up to date and ahead of the curve. This is the first of its kind study by the Pew Environmental Group, and it shows Canada's boreal forest contains more unfrozen fresh water than any other ecosystem, totaling 197 million acres of surface freshwater. And as the author Jeffrey Wells of the study says, quote, when you look at a color-coded map of the world's unspoiled freshwater reserves, it's just shocking to see all that blue, all that fresh water all over Canada. Canada's boreal forest possesses one quarter of the planet's wetlands, half the world's lakes, larger than 1 square kilometer in size, 5 of the 50 largest rivers, and the single largest remaining unpolluted freshwater body on the planet, the Great Bear Lake. Now, maintaining its flow, which contributes to a majority of the freshwater input into the Arctic Ocean, is critical to forming Arctic ice, as they decrease the salinity of the seawater, allowing it to freeze more quickly and easily. But forestry, oil, gas, that bad tar oil, all that, mining, hydropower generation, is rapidly increasing and negatively impacting the boreal water quality and quantity, as well as surrounding ecosystems. Lakes have been drained to access minerals underneath, or to dispose of tailings and other mined waste. Erosion after logging is increasing amounts of silt and water flowing into rivers, and pollution, and on a large scale can reduce regional precipitation. And construction of hydroelectric dams also has destroyed or degraded wetlands. The boreal development footprint is currently about 728,000 kilometers, or 180 million acres. So if they don't put a hold on it, if they don't get in control of it, you're going to see a whole lot of desert and wasteland and drought in Canada, something they've not experienced before. Also, you're going to see less fresh water going into the Arctic, especially the fresh, non-salty water, and that's going to affect the freeze. That, in turn, will affect global warming. So it's all interconnected. I'm Gary Noll, and I'm looking, and our phone system isn't just now fixed. Okay, sorry. I was told that everyone tried to get through, and nobody could get through. Now you can call in. Our line went down at the same time. It was last thing just to get put back up, but it is back up now. So give us a call, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while we're waiting now for your calls, let's go over and say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman, who is standing by. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. I'm going to talk about cataracts, very important topic. First of all, we have to understand how the eye works. The eye is like a camera. The lens of the eye is like a camera lens. The retina in the back of the eye is like the film. So for us to have the eye working properly, we have to have that lens really clear and really has to focus very well. However, as we age, and especially if persons have a diet that's not high in antioxidants, they're at risk for that lens to actually get attacked by free radicals. So the first point for cataract information in general would be this, that the persons out there have to have high antioxidants in their general dietary intake day by day, week by week, month by month. If they don't have that, then what happens is that cataract occurs similar to when we fry an egg. If you have an egg and you have the albumin, it's sort of clear, but when you fry the egg, it becomes white, becomes opaque. The lens of the eye is in the same way similar in that if that lens becomes darkened from the free radicals, then we have a progression of problems with the lens and with the whole eye process. So first off, you might have just a little dusty, like dust on a window. Next level might be oil on the window. Next might be that the light coming through is, the window is even darker and you can't see hardly at all. So it could be a progression of the lens deteriorating over time. Now, and in America today, most people over the age of 60 have cataracts starting to develop. It's very, very common. In fact, the biggest problem of Medicare surgery in America is cataract operations. Now, those operations are very, very successful, however. It's the biggest Medicare expense, but it's very, very successful. And actually, there are two new aspects of that which everybody should be aware of. First off, there is now available a multifocal lens implant. In other words, they remove the cataract from the eye. They put in a multifocal lens implant, very, very effective. This is heresy in a sense to alternative medicine, but this surgery is very, very safe, very effective, and is done minimum of downside and works very, very well. Also now there's even a better new lens called the toric astigmatic, T-O-R-I-C, toric astigmatis lens. In other words, we now have a lens that could even help with what was astigmatism prior to the cataract being removed. Going back to the whole process of how to avoid it.
One second before you do, Marty.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people ask, and I just think you can answer it now for them. Can you recloud a new lens if it's synthetic versus the lens that the eye actually produces? Can you have another cataract or not?
Well, I don't have a 100% perfect answer because I'm not an ophthalmology surgeon, but I would say I've seen many, many patients who've had the lens in there 10, 15 years and they've been fine, but that doesn't mean that it could occur. But I've seen very good results for many, many people out there. It's
okay.
The best I could say.
All right. I believe that you cannot develop another cataract in a synthetic lens.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Please continue.
Okay. So now we're up to what else to do besides the antioxidants in the diet. Avoid fried foods. Avoid trans fats. Avoid allergic food. Especially you should be eating mainly organic because the pesticides and other toxins can affect the cataract. Another thing that's very, very damaging is cigarette smoke. And I've seen many patients out there who smoke or are exposed to smoke in the environment, and they do very, very badly. So it's a key issue because also cigarette smoke may have cadmium in it, and when studies have been done on the cadmium concentration of lenses, whereby that the cataract was, let's say, very severe and rapid, the cadmium concentration of the lens was 2 to 3 times higher than normal. So that's very, very bad. Cigarette smoke is super bad for that issue. Going back to what else you should eat would be increased consumption of legumes. Those are high in sulfur-containing amino acids, so legumes are very helpful. Yellow-orange vegetables high in carotenes are very helpful. Fresh fruits and vegetables high in vitamin E and C are very helpful, and green juices are super helpful. All those are great to help to retard the progression of the cataract. Now, also one has to understand a little bit of the physiology whereby the lens needs adequate levels of antioxidant enzymes, and there are three major antioxidant enzymes, superoxide dismutase, or also called SOD, catalase, and glutathione. Very, very important antioxidant enzymes help the lens to be protected. Also, there are antioxidants beyond just those, especially E, C, and selenium. Those are key basic antioxidant stuff. And we can go beyond all that by doing certain other nutrients, high vitamin C, alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin B6, N-acetylcysteine, selenium, and zinc. Those are very, very helpful just get a few ideas about dose. The selenium could be 200 to 300 mcg per day for openers. Zinc could be 25 to 50 per day for openers. NAC or N-acetylcysteine could be 600 to 1200 a day. And B6 could be 50 or 75 milligrams per day. And alpha-lipoic could be about 300 per day. These are ballpark ideas. There are some other, let's call them good guys here. Lutein, 6 to 10 milligrams, very helpful. Zeaxanthin, low dose, 2 to 3 milligrams. Beta-carotene, very, very helpful, 15,000 to 25,000 IUs per day. E, especially mixed tocopherols, 400 to 800. Bilberry, very, very helpful, 100 to 150. So we have here the good news is, if the cataract does develop or you haven't gotten on board quick enough and you don't eat properly, one of the rare instances where modern medicine is very, very helpful to put in a special lens, and as you say, that lens is pretty protective against any damage. And these lenses work very, very well. You can see very, very well. I've seen hundreds of patients who had the operation with no side effects, and they've done well for many years. And so we have here a issue where we can prevent cataract if we're really careful, but if we haven't prevented them, we have an option. We have a surgical option, which is very, very helpful.
I appreciate that, Marty. Thank you very much. Marty Feldman can be reached in his office in New York at 212-744-4413. Now, the latest information on your brain. Memory problems may be a sign of stroke risk. This is brand new, and it's from University of Alabama, and it says people who have memory problems, short-term memory loss as well, or other declines in their mental abilities may be at a higher risk of stroke. Quote, our findings are ways to prevent stroke and identify people at risk for stroke are important public health issues. Study shows we might be getting a better idea who is at risk, and now they're looking at this. So let's just keep in mind why. Why would you be at greater risk of having a stroke if you're having memory problems? Because the likelihood is what you've been doing to contribute to your memory problems, eating foods that are very acidic, creating a lot of free radicals, eating foods that cause, like dairy products, and meat that causes, with arachidonic acid, your red blood cells to clump together, to aggregate, and then create clots, that all impacts your brain in a negative way. Alcohol impacts your brain in a negative way and makes you more susceptible to stroke. So as your brain goes, what is causing your brain to go is also more likely to cause a stroke. So just look at the opposite of that. What if I want to have a healthy brain? What if I want my brain to be vital, to grow new neurons, to grow new dendrites? Alpha-lipoic acid, phosphatidylserine, acetyl-L-carnitine, carnosine, all simple nutrients, inexpensive nutrients, but very important for the brain. Ginkgo biloba, cayenne pepper at high heat unit. And then stay with the juices and stay with the foods and fruits and vegetables and grains that are highly alkalizing. Now, vitamin E and tocotrienols not only are great for you as far as helping protect your heart, but they're also nourishing the brain, and they separate out the blood cells. You're less likely to have a stroke. Throw in vitamin C. It thins the blood and less likely to have a stroke. Coenzyme Q10 gives your heart energy, gives your brain energy in a great way, and you should always, before going out for an exercise, take 100 to 300 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 and 25 milligrams of NADH. That also protects your heart, protects your brain, but it thins the blood, which is very good. Green tea, great for the brain, great for memory, great for helping to stop free radicals and help prevent a lot of the DNA damage. It also thins the blood and prevents a stroke. Green juices, cabbage, celery, cucumber, and apple, nice way to thin the blood and protect your brain and protect your heart. So the things they want to sell us can end up having devastating effects. Now, the Masters was just done, and Phil Nicholson did a commercial right at the end of it. And in the commercial, he was talking about how he had this arthritis, and he took this drug. And then they started talking about the side effects of the drug. Greater susceptibility to tuberculosis, dying of several different causes. And they went on for about 30 seconds on all the negative side effects, many of which were fatal. Well, why in the world would someone use something that could cause you to die, and when there's so many ways we can turn off the inflammation in the joints without any problem, with no negative side effects. That's the power of being conditioned. That's the power that we end up being influenced with in an unfortunate way. I'm Gary Noll. We've just gotten our phones reconnected. We have a caller up. Let's see who that caller is, and we'll say hello to them before we get out of this particular hour. And then I want to go over and say hello to Mike Rupert, because Michael's standing by. Michael's show follows this one, and he's doing very well. So let's say, well, no, I'm sorry. My engineer said I can't get a guest on, or can't get a person up because they're still having problems with the line. I apologize for that. Let's say hello to Michael Rupert, who's standing by. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. What are you going to have on tonight?
Well, we got Carolyn Baker coming back in the wake of all the events taking place. But I think most importantly, we all understand the only big story in the world is Fukushima and the reactors. But we're all stressed out. I know I've been very heavily stressed this week. And I want to talk about, we're going to be like a couple of elders talking about some stress. I'm going to give some updates, too. I just put up an emergency action alert on CollapseNet. I'm pretty clear that we have only until July before things become unrecognizable. And it's actually pretty simple, because that's when all the quarterly earnings reports around the world are going to come in. And that's how the stock market makes its decision. And we are going to see the effect of the worldwide loss of Japanese components and circuitry. So it's going to be fun come July. Citigroup has just issued a sell for all auto companies anywhere in the world.
Well, we have to also add into that, up to this point, we've been given misinformation. We've been told repeatedly that there's no problem, but they've only focused on the iodine component of the fissionable material, not the cesium part, which is a half-life of 60 years and is very toxic, nor the plutonium. So there are over 60 different fissionable products, some having half-lives or full lives of over 1,000 years. And the same logic that you cannot stop the wind from blowing at a 10 or 20 or 30 mile belt that you've created a safety region around a factory, so too in the water. When they say, oh, the fish, for the first time now they're going to look at the radiation levels in fish. But don't worry, because this will dissipate. It will not dissipate. The iodine may dissipate in 8 to 12 days, 16 days, but the others will not. It'll be there for decades. And that
one of the other things that has really got me concerned, I'm going to read this story on the air tonight, is that this is a solid, verified story that rainwater testing in San Francisco showed I-135 levels 18,000% above normal. It's radioactive contamination has been found on food here. I'm really glad that I'm doing a lot of herbal stuff right now, like reishi mushrooms, to make my system want to not absorb any of that.
Also, well, that will help you not absorb some, but you cannot protect yourself from absorbing what you're breathing. It
yes.
can only minimize what happens when it gets into the body. Also, there's another factor, and that is this. I've got my hands on 18,000 documents, including court transcripts, that shows that the people have known all along that the backup generators don't work, that the tests have been falsified, they have not run these generators for 5 straight days, 24/7 at full power, that you would have to if there's nuclear meltdown. They have frequently been run for under 1 hour. Why? Because these generators were meant to be in ships and not in nuclear factories. And yet these are the same identical generators in all 104 American nuclear facilities. And so their backup system was destined to fail the first time it was challenged. And that is a major cover-up. And also, follow the money trail. And if you follow the money trail, you'll see that the largest provider of nuclear energy in the United States was the largest contributor of any energy cartel, even more than coal and oil and gas, to President Obama. Why? Look who was a major consultant for it. A man named David Axelrod, campaign director of the Clinton first campaign, and now will be the second. And everywhere you look, you see these people had their power. And this is why Hillary Clinton, the same company owns it, owns the Indian Point, just above New York City, 33 miles, out of Arkansas. Look at who they hired right after he was convicted of a fraud and sentenced 3 years in prison. Hubble, who was the, I think he was Solicitor General under Clinton. And that was that scandal where we were never told who those checks that were, or the hours over billing hours, which company it was. It was a nuclear company. Well, why didn't they make the complaint? Why weren't they the ones asking for their money back? Didn't anyone find that odd? Well, gee whiz, who's one of the biggest promoters of nuclear in the United States and defended Indian Point from being closed when Cuomo, the governor, wanted to close it, the first Governor Cuomo? Hillary Clinton. Follow the money trail, and you'll see. And we have 18,000 court documents now that show the truth. So, over to you. Have a great program. I look forward to listening to it.
Gary, thank you.
Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing on our program tomorrow.